welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And yes, we have another great show to deal with subjects such as metaphysics and spirituality. Tonight, we might even include ideas about different ways of religion and understanding how God is known in other worlds besides just ours. That should be an interesting subject. And we're also going to be dealing with some scientific issues, because whenever we're dealing with other planets and worlds, usually there's some science about. I thought that this would be an interesting subject because, well, frankly, we haven't talked about it specifically in this way before, and I thought it would be interesting. So how God is known in other worlds is tonight's topic. If you want, you can call in, and that number is, just in case you don't have it, 877-876-5227. And also, if perchance you are not listening on a phone, but you would prefer to do that, you can listen into the show on any telephone from anywhere by calling 712-432-0075. It's another option to how to hear the show. Okay, so what do we mean by how God is known? That's the first part, I think, of defining what I'm going to be talking about tonight. And on Earth, which is where we'll start, of course, on Earth, God is known in probably the least understandable way of virtually any planet in the universe. We're like really at the bottom level in terms of knowing and understanding God. And so from that particular standpoint, we're really behind the eight ball, you might say. And let me explain why that is the case. Now, you've heard me say this before. Earth is really an experiment in trying to overcome a kind of new way that evil is expressing itself in the universe and will in future times be much more prevalent. Now, this new way has more to do with mental expressions of evil rather than just astral or emotional ways of people being evil and or evil acting its way of gaining control and power over others. The mental type of evil deals with what we traditionally, in the last 100 to 200 years, have called propaganda. Now, you might say, well, wait a second. Propaganda is evil? Well, most propaganda is evil, or at least tends to develop evil. And I might say it is, in its own category, only in and of itself evil. But evil is so profoundly attracted to and uses propaganda at this time in this world that it's hard to dissociate the two from each other. Now, you notice I said between 1 and 200 years ago. What was going on before that? How come there wasn't a lot of propaganda going on? And the reason that propaganda became so prominent is that human beings have developed themselves to the point where their mental bodies, the mental thought processes and centers and senses that allows them to think in structured thought being concepts and what we sometimes refer to as examples of the concepts, other people call them thought forms. And this allows us to develop the kinds of things that we are familiar with. Technology is a big issue. Advanced forms of civilization. And one of the big parts of technology, and especially advanced forms of civilization, is enhanced and sometimes profoundly advanced communication. Now, that's a good thing. As our minds develop, we develop the ability to communicate over longer distances in more profound and, we'll say, ubiquitous ways in which we can reach billions of people. That was impossible until, give or take, at least 130, 140 years ago. And before that, it just wasn't possible because the technologies that make it possible, which come from the mental development of humanity, were not available. That's it. Now you're starting to see what's happening. As we develop ourselves, which is a good thing, we transfer some of this into the use of the lower kingdoms and develop it as part of our civilization. We use things like silicon and some of the advancements of what we call science, although it's really a little more sophisticated than even that statement. And we do this because it's an extension of our own bodies. It's sort of like suddenly we're becoming super people, as though we had these super senses, which are improved dramatically by the fact that we can first use the telegraph, and then eventually we could use things such as radio and television, and then eventually satellites, and it goes on and on, right? So all of these things have enhanced our ability to communicate and to influence and affect people with our thoughts via some technological factors that we develop in our civilizations. Now, that's a good thing. A lot of you are saying, so what's so bad about that? Well, nothing's bad about it. But like anything else, it's kind of a neutral, and it could be used for good, and it has been in many circumstances. However, about the time that this development started, really kind of with telegraph, before telegraph, there was smoke signals, there was Pony Express, there was what we would call a mail system based upon, people taking mail mostly through horseback or the use of horse-driven carts and wagons, or by boat, usually wind-driven boat. I mean, these very slow methods of communication don't lend themselves to propaganda. Propaganda is dependent upon the ability to tell lies, untruths, that confuse the structured thinking of human beings, and it allows people to change. Now, I know you may call it spin, or you may call it other words, but I'm calling it lies because I think that's the clearest way to define it. That allows human beings to gain control and influence over vast numbers of other human beings in a relatively short order. The most important element to it is time. If you can't communicate with literally hundreds to millions or more people in a very short period of time, it is almost impossible to garner propaganda. Now, some of you might be saying, well, what about Gutenberg and the printing press and newspapers and all that stuff? Weren't they influencing people 300-400 years ago? Yeah, books, articles, magazines, and newsprint, newspapers, did begin small amounts of propaganda. The problem is that the people who were reading at that time were the people who were most able to determine when things were being told to them that weren't true. And the other advantage to those things is that the mind can mull over a statement many times over that's in written form, and it allows it to take its time. So no matter how much it's barraged through various newspaper sources or books or whatever, it can work it out. But when we get to the technologies of telegraph, which I understand is just, tapping code, but it's at least fast. It goes through a large area, and then it's disseminated oftentimes by others more verbally. But the point is that was the very beginning of it. Then you get to things such as radio, and things big time change, because now you can say a lot of things in a very short time that are untrue. And it would take many days to weeks of research, of reading things, as an example, to maybe uncover those lies. And the dark side, evil, thought this was a great opportunity to gain control and influence over multitudes of people, starting just before the beginning of the 20th century and moving swiftly into the 20th century and all of the terrible things that then took place. So really, newspapers are just too slow, and they give people a lot of opportunity to discuss and think about the supposed lies that may be in them. Whereas the verbal word communicated to masses of people is the ticket. And once that was available, the dark side went nuts in using propaganda as its main tool. Now, you can say or ask me, and it would be a fair question, well, we're talking about how God is known in other worlds. What is the difference here, and why are things so bad on Earth? And let me say it this way. Earth has some bad karma, meaning that some of the things that Earth has done in the past, as well as a planet associated with Earth that no longer exists and came before Earth in an earlier star system, that karma, it makes it very difficult for human beings to have an understanding of their creator, or God, because when they look into their immediate life, they have great misunderstandings because they say, well, these terrible things are going on. Why are they going on? Either I don't understand God, or there is no God, because all these bad things are happening. And so Earth has this great chip on its shoulder of doubt. Doubt about its creator, doubt about a fair and just creator, and doubt about there being a creator. Because there's all this really harsh worldwide karma that makes life so difficult on Earth. Now, you can say, well, didn't you say we're an experiment? What kind of experiment is this? You put the worst situation and put all these people together in the worst situation, and you see how much they can suffer. No. The experiment is to see if we can overcome the tendency to become evil under the worst of circumstances. And by doing so, we will reverse the karma from developing a very evil planet in the past. Not all of us did this, by the way. Not even probably the majority of us did that. But there's still a significant number of people on Earth that still have an association with this earlier planet. The rest of us, you know, came and said, well, boy, this is a tough place. This is a really tough place. And we knew maybe something about the coming propaganda issues a few hundred years ago, 1,000 years ago. And we knew about all the other problems that Earth was facing, and we said, hey, I'm in. Let's see if we can overcome this one of the worst kinds of evil in one of the worst places for it to exist in. So, I mean, that's basically what we're in for. Now, some of you are also saying, or thinking, well, I don't want to do this. Forget it. No, I'm ready to quit. Okay, when you go back to being yourself, which you will, in this life, assuming you're not evil, and evil people don't listen to you normally. If they do, they're only trying to figure out some way to cause some problem. But other than that, they don't listen. So here's the point. The reason that we are all here is because we've chosen to be, not because we're being, you know, like, oh, you were bad people, so you got to go here. No. We have all chosen, even the ones that were involved in the most terrible things in the past, in a prior world or whatever, those people are still here because their souls still choose to be here. Our souls want to do some great things. And one of the greatest things would be to destroy or get rid of this worst kind of evil, which is becoming more dominant because there's more and more worlds that are developing higher level civilizations. And as they do, they become more open to this kind of terrible evil, mental, monastic evil. So that's our problem. That's the bottom line is that people are all volunteers. We're all here because we chose to, and when you go back to being your soul, you know what? The odds are probably 98%, 99% you're going to choose to come back again, and under the worst circumstances of the whole thing. No, this is it is. And it's not because you're hankering for suffering. It's because we are all looking to fix this world and make it a better place and to grow God here under the worst of circumstances in some situations. So I hope this is making sense. I'm trying to explain this in a way so it's not judgmental or punitive, because it's not. It isn't. And some people I know have written books, other people have read things that suggest that. And I might say, I don't think that that's a good way of looking at Earth. It's not a good way. It's not productive, and I don't even believe it's true. I mean, are there a few people that it might be true for? Yeah, of course, you can say that. Got 7 billion people running around. Sure, there's going to be a few that may fall in categories of some far outside. But mostly, no, that's not what it's all about. All right, so then now, since I've explained this whole system, it should start making sense that at the present time, we're facing some really serious crises because this propaganda thing has really grown. It is peculiar that some of the worst propaganda is presently being handed out, given out, by the present administration in the United States. You do your own thinking about that and see if you believe what I said is true. So, you know, and every time you catch a leader, such as the president or somebody like him, you know, one of our upper authority people in the government, that contradicts himself and therefore is lying, well, one day, one week, one month to the next, you got a real problem, because that is the definition of propaganda, especially when it's done over the airways, the TV, or now they're, you know, and they're doing it over the internet, and they're doing it all over the place. When that is taking place, there's no other way to describe it than by the definition itself, and that is propaganda. And remember that propaganda is very difficult to dissociate from evil. So you do the addition and figure out what is really going on there. Okay. Now, that being the case, and Earth is really obviously the extreme example. Very few places as bad as Earth about the things that I've just talked about. But what about other worlds? I mean, okay, we've got this really messed up place, and we know that it's very hard to even know of God in this world. It's amazing, amazing. We have so many people that one way or another believe or think in God, think of God, are convinced there's a creator. It's probably worldwide way over 85% of the people in the world believe that. That's very good, because that shows that at least our spiritual senses in our bodies are working, and so we're sensing God around us. It's a good thing. And yet, with all that going for us, because that's a large number, we are not doing well in terms of truly understanding what God is. When you look at our misunderstandings of God, they are so deeply ingrained, and it's absolutely frightening. Let's talk about jihad for a second. God is, to some people, a God of vengeance and retribution for those who do not believe specifically in the ways of certain religions and parts of religions. That is some of the worst kind of evil. And the propaganda is oftentimes directed as a preachy kind of dictate coming from someone who claims to be a cleric or, you know, some kind of titled person in the religion that is telling vast numbers. I just heard this last week. It's 40 million people a week for one person who's the self-proclaimed head of the Muslims in the Middle East. But at any rate, these are vast numbers of people who are being influenced by really evil propaganda. Evil is death to others. So if they say, well, the Israelis or Zionists or whatever word they feel like saying at the time, should all be eliminated, destroyed, starting with children, and then I guess working your way up to the elderly. I don't know how they figure on doing it. But at any rate, if they should be destroyed, all the Jews in the Middle East and eventually, I presume, in the world, we're talking, you know, somewhere between 15 and 20 million people are going to be eliminated by this decree, which is propaganda, because the decree is based upon lies. What are the lies? Well, the first lie is that God wants man to kill other people because they don't supposedly worship God the way the people that are going to go do the killing do. And that's one of the largest lies you can possibly make. It's almost incredulous that the rest of the world isn't saying, wow, those people are really, really crazy, you know, because that's like so anti-God that anybody that says that is not only not a good Muslim or something, whatever, they're not good anythings. So that's the weird thing about this, is that we don't see these kind of outrages happening very often. Now, certainly some Israelis are pretty outraged, outraged about it. But nonetheless, it gets a creepy feeling to me to think that there are hundreds of millions of people who think that way. And you might say, well, that's a very big number. What makes you think that? Well, based upon the statistics, there's somewhere around a 1.25 or something, or maybe more, billion Muslims. And 10 to 20% of them believe in jihad. Okay, you do the math. There you go. So it's that is a conservative number. It is not, you know, some inflated, you know, nonsense and craziness. So okay, so we've got, so that's one instance. I'm just using that as an example, but it's hard. It's sort of a blatant example. It's right in your face kind of example. That is not not the kind of thing you can ignore very easily. And I don't want us ignoring this, because the more you ignore the things I'm going to be talking about and the things I already have, the more evil wins. So we don't want to be ignoring these things, and I don't want evil to win. What are some of the other terrible lies that we hear from both religions and other avenues about God? Well, there's another great lie that comes from some members of the quote-unquote quasi-scientific community, oftentimes these days joined with some of the people in the present progressive democratic movement. Weird, huh? They joined together. And that lie is that there's no God. Now, you can say, well, I know progressives, they go to church, you know. President Obama goes to church. Yeah, he goes to a church that basically the lies that the churches tell him are that that people do not have individual rights, and that there should be a redistribution of wealth so that the poorest people have equality, equal amounts of wealth with all others. We used to call that communism. And, you know, just things like that. And is that really, you know, is that really okay? No, it's not okay, because that isn't a religion. The person, they may call themselves a church, a black blank blank church or whatever blank blank, but their representation of the religion that the church is supposed to be under, which in this case is a Christian religion, is anti-Christian. And if it's anti-Christian, it would most likely, by most people's standard, be anti-God. Now, why do I say it's anti-Christian? Well, because Christianity talks about individual salvation, and if you have a collective good that the church is supposedly fighting for, and it puts down individual salvation and talks about only collective salvation, then you don't have a Christian church. You have the Church of Karl Marx. That's a kind of contradiction in itself, because Marx said that religion is the opiate of the masses. That's how supposedly people are misguided, when the opposite is true. Propaganda is most effective when religion is removed. Real religion, not this fake kind of religion. So we have this problem, and then let's look at science. What's going on with science? Well, in the last couple hundred years, ever since Darwin, science has moved very strongly away from faith in God and religion. Now, why? Well, because when people develop a certain egotism and eventually arrogance about their quote-unquote knowledge of the universe and knowledge of their world, they think it nullifies God, because there's a lack of knowledge of God in science. And so the people that are heavily into science say, well, there's nothing you can say that can prove the existence of God. Actually, I can prove the existence of God, but that's a whole different story. I think the important thing here is that on Earth, a peculiar thing has happened, in that science has become propagandized through evil. About the time that I told you about the telegraph, et cetera, all that came about at the same time. When we were able to structurally come up with evolution, which is a great theory and a great understanding of how God helps to develop lower forms of life. It doesn't work too well on spiritual parts of life, like human beings, but it's really good for the lower parts of life. At any rate, here we come up with really a finding that is a truth about God, and instead, the people who find that there's no reason to have a God, because everything can be evolved, starting with the earliest forms of life molecules, if you want to call it that, and moving forward. And this has been the kind of charge of the left and scientific community together. It's not exactly a conscious unification as much as it is a convenience one. Why would scientists find it convenient to not believe in God? Well, because if you do believe in God and you're a scientist, you have to be amazingly humble, because you have to admit you have great misunderstandings about many parts of what you call to be the truth of science. And most scientists don't like that. They like to think they know everything or nearly everything, and whatever they don't know is quote-unquote soon to be discovered, and whatever they do know is beyond any reasonable doubt and to a moral certainty, and to the absolute umpteenth level that they know it. And about every 5 years they change what they knew. No kidding. So tell me how that's truth or science. Well, it's not. It's just a bunch of egotism and sometimes arrogance. All right, so we've got a problem, and that problem is defined by the continual misunderstanding of scientific principles, from medicine to physics to some elements of chemistry, although strangely, chemistry is one of the sciences that is probably the more accurate of the sciences. But not still very accurate. And then it goes on and on to biology, of course, earth sciences. Just this year, we found out a whole bunch of stuff about the earth that we had no clue. We still don't understand some things and still are finding out more. So there's a lack of this humility, and that's what breeds this sort of thinking. It often starts in academic places, MIT, Chicago. I mean, I don't want to pick on any particular school. It could be Harvard, Yale, Princeton, any of those places, or some obscure colleges. It doesn't matter. The issue here is that why does it seem to stem from universities? Because it's the place where people can use propaganda around others who basically are paying for it, paying to be propagandized, and at the same time, who have no choice because their grades are dependent upon pleasing an instructor who loves the fact that they can be as egotistical and or arrogant as they please to be and get away with that among large numbers, relatively large numbers, of students who have to follow their every thought, even if those don't make any sense. So that's a bad place, and it breeds in those kinds of places. Are there some schools that allow really good open thinking and challenges to even professors' thinking and et cetera? Yeah, but they're pretty difficult to find. Many more schools are, as I first described, the schools where there's real open-mindedness and true venture in thinking and a lot of debate about many theories, including ones that are supposedly extremely well accepted. Those are rare, rare places. You can't, you can spend a whole day just trying to find a couple of them. So this is no small thing. And again, the principles of propaganda apply. You're talking about one person talking to a large number of people, and then disseminating books and materials that almost always back themselves up, even though there's other things that bulb a little up in contradiction to what they've been teaching. And this goes on and on. And that's in universities and higher levels. What about in schools, like public schools for elementary and high school? Well, it's even worse there. There, not only are you dealing with people that are paying you to be propagandized, these poor children have no rights. And the teachers are like gods to them and oftentimes love the experience of being held in such esteem with their bogus and nonsense ideas, oftentimes specifically designed to harm in weird ways and influence the minds of youngsters. And once you plant the seeds of all this propaganda, by the time they grow up to the point where they could normally see the lies, they have become corrupted in their mental thinking, and they cannot see lies any longer. Therefore, God is virtually absent to them. You see how this system is really scary on Earth. It is bad. Okay, now you're saying, well, boy, I don't know. Rousseau was supposed to be God is known, how God is known in the world. We're going to be covering it, believe me. But I had to cover how Earth is, because if we don't understand where we are, how are we going to understand these other places where you haven't been? So you got to have some anchor, some place to compare them to, and some rationale for understanding the problems that we face here and how we can move ahead by knowing something about other worlds that don't have the kinds of problems we have. And that's where most of my emphasis is going to be. I'm not going to talk about other Earth-like planets that have similar kinds of problems we do. We already know enough, especially from what I covered in this portion of the show, so we don't have to really, don't have to go into it much more in the rest of the program. Great. That's a wonderful thing. Okay, before we go to break, let me give you some definition now. When I talk about how God is known, I'm also talking about how God is understood, and sometimes how God is co-created with, you know, the world. We are the exception to the rule, not vice versa. We also are using a system on Earth called initiation. That's a fancy word. It sounds like something really cool. What it is an acceleration in the spiritual development of people who are willing to put their necks and butts on the line to try to help other people to understand more about God while they do service themselves. And so this is, and we're doing this because, and the reason it goes faster is because the highest of the people who can do it, that can really understand God and then can serve others and help others to understand God, those folks are given all the marbles. They get the most amount of communication with God, which is slight. They get the most reinforcement in their lives that God exists, which may not be so slight in some circumstances. They get the most amount of help in numerous ways, provided that they are continually serving. And so they're really in good shape. But the problem is they are minuscule in number compared to the vast number of people who get none of the things I just said in this initiation system. And most other worlds say, well, that sucks. Because, yeah, you're okay. You've got a few people who are carrying the ball for everybody else, and it may make things go faster, but not by a small amount, by millions of years faster. But still, there are so many things wrong with the idea that it's scary. And it leaves open the opportunity for evil to use propaganda in terrible, terrible ways, as we see on Earth. So there's a lot of bad things with it. When we come back from break, I won't cover them immediately because I want to talk about the other world and get some positive stuff in, but we'll see how initiation is really not all it's cracked up to be. And in many ways, it's setting us up for a bad fall. So hopefully we can succeed with this really dangerous system that in a number of other planets has failed. Not everyone. So it's something, though, to be concerned about. Again, most of the other worlds don't have and would never come close to using the initiatory process as Earth does. I'm going to go into what they're like as soon as we come back from break, and that's going to be give or take, about 2 minutes and 30 seconds from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower, MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about how God is known in other worlds. Of course, the first part of the show just now, I talked mostly about how God is more unknown here on Earth. Now, the good news is that these other worlds, as examples I'm going to talk about, may give us some, we'll say, encouragement, positive encouragement, to look forward to how Earth can move ahead and not be as it has been. So let's talk about some of the other worlds. I'm going to just go through what is known as the ray-focused elements of these worlds. We are focused on what is commonly called the third ray. And I'll talk about a third ray world that is sacred so we can get a better understanding of that. Let's start with the first ray, the very first ray kind of world. And there are two kinds generally. One is not very well developed and maybe actually somewhat behind where Earth is at the present time, but in terms of development of human beings. And some are obviously far more advanced, but we'll cover the ones that are behind to begin with. Now, you might say, well, if they're behind, then how is God known any better in a world where humanity is behind? And the answer goes something like this. Imagine that Earth is 1,000 years ago, a millennia ago. Give or take, we'll call it the year 1100. In Europe, the people are getting ready to wage war on the Muslims and go try to kill them because they were infidel doing terrible things. And then, of course, the Muslims were about to reverse the gift of fighting and trying to kill them. And, of course, initiate jihad, which probably was encouraged in their minds from the atrocities of some of the European people. But in other parts of the world, like China, they were starting to really flourish. They were having, like, the beginning of a golden age. And they started to do some exploring and discovery. Unfortunately, it all fell apart in a couple hundred years, and they became kind of closed, etc. But 100 years ago, Earth was messed up because, although propaganda was not the major problem, there was astralism and a lot of emotional evil around us. We have just come out of a dark age period in parts of the world, and there were also instances of the Black Plague and other kinds of illnesses that had wiped out many people. The worst came actually right after that period in about 1350 in Europe. Terrible, terrible, one of the worst plagues. But nonetheless, The point that I'm trying to get at is that we're all still pretty messed up 1,000 years ago. But imagine this, okay? I'm going to try to use Earth a little bit as an example, because otherwise I'm going to be talking about something you've never seen or any experience with. So imagine a world in which using the technologies from pretty close to 1,000 years ago, people said to themselves, you know, and they're first-rate people, this business about killing each other because we got angry about this or that, or because someone isn't following things the way we think they should, et cetera, hasn't played out very well in our world. So we think that God is a God that wants us to co-create in ways that makes life more abundant, more healthy, more inclusive and non-combative, less, by far, militant. We believe that the Creator creates through us and communicates to us the right ways to create by us observing those examples in nature to understand them, and allows us to improve upon those examples by making nature less combative and nature less destructive and nature more an expression of inclusiveness and love. While at the same time, we create those ways. We are co-creating with God. We are creators ourselves. So this is the way 1,000 years ago a first-rate world would have been more focused on. They would have the use of herbal medicines in 1100 AD. Some of the greatest herbalists were from 1100 to 1300 or so AD. Most people don't know that. And they would have looked at it for examples, and they get in of this other world situation, would have looked for examples for ways of non-combatant resolving of differences, oftentimes involving, we'll say, kinds of courts in which whole groups of people can find resolution against or in some ways in defiance or of their own anger with other people's. In other words, a world in which the courts are not set up in some kind of litigation system or weird kind of stuff like we do, but instead they would set up a system in which virtually a whole country could state its case before the world. A country may not even exist as we understand it in this world, but something like that, called a province or whatever. And then the ones that they are having a problem with state their case, and then a collective method of all peoples is suggested. And they work together to find a open resolution, and all people are committed to preventing harm or violence from occurring in this system from Earth as it was amazingly about 1100 AD or so. And you might say, well, wow, that sounds awfully advanced for in comparison to where we were. And we were having wars all over the place. We were having all kinds of terrible things going on. And that's just the beginning. What else did they do? Well, their approach towards health is extremely proactive. They're very creative. So they seek ways to maintain and keep health rather than just try to treat illness after it has arrived. And their systems are based upon the sciences we really had minimal understanding of, but could have used even today if we chose to. And these sciences are about nature. And they are much closer to seeing what is the healthy way to live by seeing more of God in all parts of the lower kingdoms that they incorporate in their civilization. Now, this is on a first-rate type planet that is primitive, less developed than we are. What do you think about that? And by the way, I wouldn't mind living there myself. And so you have a place that is amazingly more godlike than is Earth as we presently live in. And certainly way more than we lived in 1100 AD, which is still recent. But I'm using these examples because if we go back too far, if we start really going too far into the future, it's going to be very difficult for us to be able to even comprehend some of the things I might talk about. Okay, what about this same world, the first ray type of world, that is more advanced than we are? Let's say a couple hundred, 300 to 500 years ahead of us. Well, that's a place that is really so far different from what we live in today, it's absolutely amazing. There is no propaganda. That's the first thing, because even though they have the technology to communicate with each other in amazing ways, and they communicate with their dogs, they communicate with plants. I mean, they really have amazing means of communication, but they also are amazingly and vastly more creative than on an individual level than people are on Earth today. Their whole educational system is about being creative in finding solutions, being creative in thinking, and being creative in actual functioning, in building things, making things, finding actual practical solutions. And this is so different because we look for the negative in life, and they are constantly looking for the positive in life. Their God is a positive God, not a God of retribution or punishment, not a God even of karmic release. Their God is a God that seeks the most beautiful, the most wonderful world results. And that's because their God is the real God. Our God is a reflection with tainted elements such as jihad and many other terrible things put on. Our God is not God. But their God is. So this type of world is just, what a place. I would, like to live there myself. Except they aren't fighting evil like we are, because there's virtually no evil on their planet. The more advanced first-ray type world would more likely than not be sacred. A sacred planet has no evil on it. And most of the inhabitants are to a greater or minor extent more enlightened than people are here on Earth. And that precludes that they will have any problems with evil. So this is how God is known in worlds like the first-rate kind of world that's either more primitive or somewhat more advanced than we are today. Let's move on to a second-rate kind of world, which is that, you might say, well, aren't they creative still, even though the second-rate... They're creative, but their main emphasis is on ensuring that everybody is as understanding of God as they possibly can be. That's the first requirement. They then educate people in every way to meet that first requirement before any other. They will also educate people to improve knowledge, but only as it serves them to understand their creator more and allows them to then be a co-participant in some way with their creator, but after they have gained mostly a vast realm of understanding in comparison to the first-rate world where people may shoot from the hip and not understand very well as much as they are creators and may find their understanding through the failures or successes in their attempt to co-create with their creator. Whereas in the second-rate type world, it doesn't go that way. People are brought to the highest level of understanding first oftentimes long before they are co-creating, even though they recognize that's an important part of it. It's not the emphasis. And if we were taking a primitive a primitive second-rate world, we would find that folks, let's say from, I'll pick another time, say from 300 A.D., Rome had been moved to the eastern province, where we now today call Turkey, and it was, it was a different kind of world. That world, though, was a world in which we were cruel and harsh and had very little understanding of God. As a matter of fact, the Roman religion in 300 AD, before 325, was mostly based upon paganism. And God was more like a human being than anything else. And further, in addition to that little strangeness, God was had all the foibles, the gods, was one God, and all the foibles that human beings have. Well, that isn't much of a god. It sounds more like a fantasy, but that's what they believe in. And so an understanding of God was completely confused, very, very confused. And it was misrepresented in numerous destructive elements to society. Now, if we compare that to a second-rate world that is much more understanding of God and not like Earth, that kind of world was a really... It really had a lot of things going wrong with it in its very inception and its very beginning part, because people didn't have much understanding, but quickly grew to become a highly understanding planet, a highly inclusive planet, and one in which there was an enormous amount of, we'll say, and it would have been, because this is in the past, again, going back to a comparison to, say, Roman times, or even better than Roman, I should have picked Egyptian times for those of you, because that is really a second-rate culture. But at any rate, their culture, even in primitive terms, involves the idea that all people should be given the opportunity and help gain the highest understanding of the Creator, and then understanding in anything and everything else that they want to help to develop more of God in. And this is really the way that world was made. In a primitive sense, they may have no more than the Romans or even the Egyptians had, but they live first to understand and second to have, if they live to have it all. And they live to help others to understand rather than to become some kind of controlling, wise person themselves. Mm-hmm. Okay, what about the more advanced second-rate type of world? That is, let's say, several hundred years ahead of where we are today. What would that world be like? Well, again, almost unrecognizable to us, because we aren't even close to being that kind of sacred planet. But nonetheless, the people there are always trying to assist others. And the first thing they try to assist them in is to understand what they don't, and to understand what they don't about God, and to help them gain clarity so that they can make choices themselves that will be more beneficial and helpful to both themselves and others. So this is another one of these heaven-like worlds where God is so well-known, because God is literally continually a part of each person's both vocabulary and activity or activities, and it's part of almost every minute of their life. That's a way different kind of place, isn't it? Yeah, I know. Why do I ever know? The sense of inclusiveness among the members of these worlds, where there's billions of people just like on Earth, although they don't grow as quickly. There might be, in the same age category, there might only be 1 or 2 billion people compared to Earth's 6 or 7 billion. And so they are amazing in the sense that they're inclusive. They are tremendous in their sense of inclusiveness. They act and think in ways that allows everybody to be an individual, but they also consider themselves one as one world. A little odd. They're not globalists because they don't seek to control others and to have a universal kind of law and structure and economic system. Instead, they relish in individual freedom, but at the same time, they seek there be an identity, a collective identity, that everyone is acting together to understand God more, and therefore is working in unison in some way. Even though the understandings may be different from each other, the fact that everyone's trying to understand God more, or most people are, is the big deal. Okay? All right, let's take a third-ray world that is sacred in comparison to Earth and talk about that. And after I finish this one, we'll take a little break just to let our minds kind of cool down from all the stuff I'm talking about. Okay, what if you're in a third-ray world that's sacred, which is we're far from that, and this world is obviously not going to be like Earth, it's most likely not going to have gone through initiatory processes. Well, what process would they have gone through if they're not using initiation? Well, they develop their world based upon a type of communication in which they strive for accuracy and truth in the way they communicate with others. And the emphasis is so strongly on that, that people, when they either accidentally or through some ego or manipulative method tell a lie, their sense of self-destruction is so profound that they may deliberate and be concerned about changing that problem for days or even weeks. Their life is to communicate in the most accurate, the most truthful ways, and to provide the ways that others can do the same, and to help everybody to ensure that all people are open and clear and truthful in their communication with each other. That's one of their big deals, and that's how they find God, because God does that. But they also want to be very active, and they want to develop their civilization in as quick a way as possible. So even the people that would be hundreds of years behind us would be catching up with us in maybe 50 to 100 years from now. So the odd thing about it is that their civilization is growing way faster than our civilization. But the other strange thing about it is that they may not be overcoming any significant levels of karma as Earth is, because if they were, because they're not using the initiatory process, they would go slower, not faster, than the development on Earth. It's kind of a strange thing, isn't it? I think it is. So, third-ray planets can be quite different from Earth if they are sacred, if they are seeking to understand and co-create with their creator on an average of, say, the majority of their day. I mean, that's like way more than people are doing on an average in our world. So this is a big deal. It's a tremendous change the way that we exist at this time. And we might say, well, okay, third ray, So we could become that. Why don't we become sacred? Why are we so stuck in the mud and all this crap propaganda and other problems going on? What's the problem? And the big problem is that it was really 20 million years ago when Earth, it was decided Earth was going to use this accelerated model of initiation and attempt to move ahead faster so it can serve some planets that if the 10 years to 20 years is wasted, those planets might suffer becoming evil themselves. So we're a great experiment, and we need to get going in this experiment because there isn't the time available to save all the worlds that we're trying to help and serve from evil. So we've got to do the down and dirty, terrible way of developing our world, which is really not helpful to us in the long run, but in the short run, and it may or may not be helpful in the long run, depending upon whether it does or does not destroy us, to attempt to go so fast. As you accelerate the spiritual development process, you run the risk of evil. That's the biggest risk. So we are involved in that grand experiment as I speak. Now, let's take a little bit of a breather here, and because I'm covering a huge amount of subjects and topics, etc. And I think we can kind of cool our heels for a few minutes. I wanted to know about 5G Gesic. It's PHYQI Gesic, GESIC. It's a great, great analgesic. If you've got any kind of pain, it's worth a try. Most people it works on. The people it doesn't work on are generally people who have problems in their lifestyle, especially if they're smoking and using drugs. It could be legal drugs or at least what we call legal drugs. But if they're addicted to them, it could be a problem. It may not work for them. Because you're trying to move energy that is caught in the body, called negative chi, in various centers. You're trying to move it out of those centers and into centers that may need more energy, but they're starved. And this energy that's blocked, the plants that are in the Gesic, they provide their energy to help move the energy in the body in very intelligent ways, that it's like having acupuncture from the inside out, or from the outside in, I should say. Well, it depends on the inside out, I guess, is the way it works. And so this is a great kind of herbal remedy, and it's all natural herbs. It's a great source of many nutrients and other things, but the most important part is the Chinese understanding of the energy model and other Eastern nations as well. And we're moving this energy around. It also is being balanced with prana, which comes from the sun. The chi comes from the earth, and it's one of the three kundalini. But it has to be balanced with the amount of prana that a person is using coming from the sun. And 5-Chi Gesic actually does do that as well. So it's doing a tremendous amount of various improvements. However, if you are leading a very selfish lifestyle, if you, as I said, are smoking and using drugs, alcohol, you may find that this formula is not going to work for you because it takes too much of it. Take it over a very relatively short time to get the energy to move or to do much good. And for a lot of people, they're just not going to use it that way. And you can take a lot of it, and even under adverse conditions in a short period of time, you can relieve the pains and tension that you want. You just have to use it correctly. And it would be helpful if you are eating poorly or badly and you're smoking or drinking and using drugs, that you just cease doing those things because you'll get much better results if you're going to get any results at all from using the Gesic. And if you don't get results, you get your money back. Yeah, even if you're the world's worst drug addict, if you really try Jesus, which I wouldn't know why you would, but that's it, you're going to try it, and it truly doesn't work for you, you get your money back. And tell me, that isn't a big deal. And it, I mean, most companies would say, well, if you abuse our product by taking it under these circumstances, we're not going to give you back your money. But we're not trying to manipulate the situation to get out of things. So we said, hey, it doesn't work, you get your money back. So we hope it will, and most people it does. But there's going to be some that won't because of the nature of the variability of how people are. Now, if you want to buy Jesus, you can go to buyjesus.com. That's where you can go to buy Jesus. When you go there, there's other formulas that we offer to help you live healthier and in better ways. This is Jesus helps you to do that. So does some of these other products that we have been involved in. I was involved in some of the formulation, and others that are members of the spiritual group I'm part of, and still even other people who are not in that group, are also involved in the making and the distribution and, you know, the whole thing. So it's a collective effort. Of course it is. Of course it is. In case you want to buy some Jesus and you don't want to do it online, you can call this number, 602-431-5762. That's 602-431-5762. If you were listening last week, we lost a number of minutes on the beginning of the show because of problems on our board. But I wanted to reiterate something I said about a doctor that I went to see. Had a minor issue, a hornet or a wasp, not sure which, stung me on my forearm. Not a big thing. But a little piece of the stinger got deep into the skin. So I wanted to take it out before it did any serious problems. Any serious harm. And I went to Dr. Brendan McCarthy. He's a naturopath, MD. And you might want to know about him if you live anywhere in the Phoenix metropolitan area, because he's a great doctor. And he has an emergency walk-in place, so you can use him in that way if you've never seen him before. You can make him your main primary physician and use him for many, many different health issues. He's great at helping people to stay healthy rather than just to try to only treat the illnesses that they already have, which he'll gladly do and help you to succeed in that, most likely. And he's involved in all kinds of things that are helpful. And you can check him out. He's in Chandler. And let me give you his address. It's 1949 West Ray Road. And he's at a place, it's his own place. It's called the Protea, Protea Medical Center. Protea Medical Center. Dr. Brendan McCarthy. And if you want to call him and you want to see if he can see you, 480-557-9095. 480-957-9095. He's open 6 days a week from 9 to 6 and 11 to 4 on Saturday. Monday to Friday is 9 to 6. So, really, check him out. And his place is so non-medical. I love it. So there's a lot of white coats and all of the strange trappings of medicine. Instead, it's like going to a very comfortable, laid-back massage kind of parlor or something. You know, you're going in and getting a massage, and maybe it's a spa, and maybe it's a great place. I mean, it's wonderful. Okay, let's get back to now. How God is known in other worlds, because that's really the bottom line for today's show. All right, so we were talking about the third ray kind of world, but what about the fourth ray world, which is kind of a very strange place compared to us, because when you're in a third-rate world, the strangest worlds are usually the one that's one ahead, one numerical value ahead of you. The fourth way has almost a very, very different kind of approach. And people who live in a more normalized, I'll call it, fourth-rate type world, and let's say they're more primitive than us. Let's say that they are so primitive that we could go back to a time, I said the Egyptians, let's go back to a time, maybe 1,000, they say. What will we find? If they were 3,000 years behind us as today, but they were not as messed up as we are. In using the fourth ray, they try to make their world as beautiful as possible to improve their senses, because they want to have a much clearer sense of God. And they believe that beauty is one of those ways that you gain a clearer sense of God. And so the world is absolutely dazzling, you know. It has beauty every place you turn. And people are very balanced between their spiritual and their material nature. And we don't even really know what that is, because there's almost no place on earth that has that, because we're kind of primitive and have in our own right and have very many difficulties. But they're pretty balanced. So although they live spiritual lives, they tend to balance it very successfully with their material life, and while they're physically alive in particular. And so this is a world where you even arrive here, you're just in wonderment. And it is this place where people have almost a continual sense of being in balance with God. They promote that not only in themselves but for other people as well. The promotion of having a sense of being in balance with God and nature as a big deal. Okay, how is that different from us? Well, Earth is so unbalanced, and we have been imbalanced throughout history. So vast number of countries with great difficulties, many, many people killed in wars and destruction, etc., obviously out of balance. Well, they don't have that sort of thing. They live in a place of harmony and nearly complete balance in their lives. And I could say, well, yeah, but do they grow any from this? Because strife and other things can create forces for people to grow. That's true in a planet like Earth, where forces are necessary. But in a planet like whatever the name might be, a fourth-ray world, a primitive compared to us, but still a fourth-ray world that's successfully developing itself along that ray focus, those folks are going to be almost endlessly seeking for ways to improve their physical senses and their astral and mental as well, while at the same time they are also attempting to be those senses be used in ways that balance them with their spiritual thoughts. So the two are almost constantly in balance as one together. That sounds pretty enticing? Yeah, it does to me too. But what happens if we're dealing with a fourth-rate type world that is in another part, maybe part of our galaxy or who knows where, that is advanced? And there's a lot of those. I mean, there's a lot of more advanced worlds than there are primitive worlds in comparison to Earth, just so you know that. I didn't mention it earlier, but that's true among every type of ray focus. Well, if they're more advanced, the people themselves have great beauty. Their auras are glowing all the time. And they have the best senses of virtually anybody you're going to meet. They seldom have accidents, and they almost never get ill, because their senses tell them when either is going to likely occur, and they can avoid it. But they also are very wise, because they're so balanced in their thinking. And their processes of living is that the outcome of their life is to produce more beauty so that God is present for all to see and experience and to be affected by that beauty in their own senses so that they are permanently changed to be more able to see and understand God on their planet. And this is where the way the vast majority of people actually live in this more advanced fourth-ray type of world. Now, you might say, well, this is all study like panacea or something. Well, remember, I'm talking about worlds that are far and wide more successful than Earth is in general in the development of their civilization, but they aren't nearly, not even close, to being as successful as Earth is in at least fighting evil, because they don't experience anywhere near the amount of evil that is on Earth at this time or most any other time in its past. So there is a big trade-off, and I don't want you to think that it's all just wonderful, because some of those people might someday even decide to relocate to Earth as souls and choose this planet because they want to make a difference in terms of defeating evil, not because they don't want to live in a beautiful world, but because they sacrifice that to be here instead. That certainly makes some sense to me. I don't know if it makes sense to you, but it makes a lot of sense to me. And so people in that kind of world are really in an unusual posture because their life is really about the joining of spirit with matter, not so much as our life is the fighting of negative spirits, evil, and the prevention of the destruction of matter, which is a big part of our world. So there's a lot of differences, and that's what I was trying to say earlier, between particularly the third-ray type of world and the fourth-ray, and particularly when one world is all screwed up and like ours, and the other might be sacred or approaching sacredness, it's a vast difference. Vast difference. Okay, let's move on, because we don't want to take all the time just going over each of these defining elements. But I hope that this is starting to enlighten people about how God is known in other worlds. Because God is not the same to people who live in a fourth-ray world than someone who lives in a first-ray world. They experience God in the way that their planet is focused. That doesn't mean that they don't relish and even to some extent understand some of the things about God is represented and understood in other worlds. It's just that on their world they understand God best through the way that I'm describing or ways I'm describing. I hope you followed what I just said, because that's important. Okay, so what about the fifth ray type of world? Well, that's the way that science is in mathematics, also sometimes law and the application of law. So it's an interesting kind of way to have a planet developed, and it's much more in sync with a third-ray kind of world than a fourth-ray would be. Fourth-ray is a feminine, the most feminine kind of ray in many respects. And it's very different than the third ray, which is very masculine. It's just a very different kind of animal. Okay. People in a fifth ray world that is more primitive than we are, by let's say hundreds and hundreds of years, on that world, people would be concerned about finding truth in their minds and in God. They'd be very concerned about invention. I talk about creation. Creation is a wide, wide subject, but invention is the application of creation to the physical surroundings and physical world. It doesn't have to always involve physical things, but it's something interacting with the physical world. And so they're extremely inventive. And their inventions would be somewhere along the lines, let's say, of hundreds of years ago, of Leonardo da Vinci, but beyond. And the way da Vinci was is, in some respects, the way many people would live in that kind of world, sort of a Renaissance place, but a place where they get to enjoy and understand their God by finding truth, and the truth is oftentimes done through their inventiveness, by challenging the existing notions of things and experimenting to find out the truth. That's the means in which these people of a more primitive world would function. Now, how would people of a greater and much more developed civilization and much more advanced than we are meet? Well, first of all, they would be not so much inventing in ways that are just about the material surroundings, especially if they're material forms, such as living in a physical world as we are. But they would also be using their inventiveness to find ways of communicating with others in other dimensions of time and space, find ways of, discovering more about God. Their discovery about God would be in ways that they would investigate through technology in some cases, and through mind experiments in others, to find out what God is really like. So they are going to be trying to find out what God is like based upon a model of truth and wisdom and whole knowledge, rather than trying to just be creative or being more inclusive with others. Their approach would be more the experimental route, which is fine. And it would be, again, a very wondrous place to visit, maybe not nearly as beautiful as a fourth-rate world, but one in which truth and accuracy of thought would be regarded as a very high and important trait to have. Now, you could say, well, okay, I'd rather go to the fourth-rate world, though, because it sounds like it would be more fun. Well, it might be. For some people, that's certainly true. And remember this. The proclivity and inclination to living in any of these types of worlds is based upon the soul who chooses to be there. Everything's on a volunteer basis. So the soul is there because it wants to live in that kind of world. Not all souls do. So, I mean, it's just like option number 1 through 7 with many sub-options of each. But it's still a very good thing. It gives us a lot of choices, and those choices are important in our development. There may be a time when a soul goes to one kind of planet, and then right in the middle of its development there, it finds that it can be more productive for its helping its creator, God, to become part of all other souls and all other beings by going to a completely different kind of world. And so, you know, if that's when its highest and best use is of itself, then it will go. I know that's maybe a little hard to believe and understand, but it is the truth as I understand it. Okay, so these fifth-rate worlds are not so dry and distant, life isn't, as science may be today in our world, nor is it as arrogant or egotistical by any stretch, because people are much more in touch with who they really are, and they are not being influenced to any great extent by how other people are. And so they're real scientists. They're not pseudoscientists. They're real scientists. They don't propagandize. And they wouldn't be fooled if other people did. So they're really quite different than we have been or are on Earth. But that difference is all towards the better, in my opinion. And it leaves us open to the idea that we all have the opportunity to become experimenters and much wiser in our thinking and much more structured in looking for truth in our thinking than we ever have been maybe before. We have that opportunity, and looking at a fifth-ray world that is advanced from us would give us that in space. We would be in a world in which people are living truth of God. They would have marvelous inventions that would discover more and more directly about God. They might even have inventions that allow them to have literal conversations with God. Now, I'm not talking about the guy you know, Welsh, who had his own conversations about it. I'm talking about on a worldwide, civilization-wide left scale, people could get plugged in with someone and have a conversation with God. How cool would that be? Now, you may not like this world that I just described. You'd rather go to the fourth way or some other world. But it would be pretty cool to have a direct conversation with God through some form of technology. I think that's an amazing thing. And if you don't, that's okay. I just wouldn't mind doing it. Because I would like to live on every one of these worlds. So, to me, it would be okay to just sort of go for a while to one and then to another and then to another. And remember, even within these general categories, there are millions of worlds in each, a billion in each one of these categories throughout the universe. And each one might be very different from the other, even though they're in the same ray focus. And when you get outside of ray focus, there's going to be huge differences. I mean, just a large, beyond our counting ability, number of places that we can go serve in. That's a great thing. And it kind of makes Earth look relatively small from the standpoint that we are still struggling. But again, we're fighting against some of the worst evil in the universe. And so obviously we're going to have some difficult moments that other worlds just don't have because they're not doing the same thing that we're doing. That doesn't belittle them. I'm not taking anything away from who they are. I'm just saying that we are doing this really tough job. Okay? So let's move on to the six-ray type of world that is, in the more primitive sense, maybe hundreds and hundreds of years behind us. And in that kind of world, you would find a strong tendency towards some forms of organized religion and a predominance of people would collectively get together to try to understand God from the standpoint of not just knowledge and not just the ability to reason and think using your higher mind. Those are all good ways to understand God, and you can use them in a six-ray world. But the one element that would be missing, if that's all you use, would be faith. And you could say, well, what do you need faith for if God is known in other worlds and in the world you're in if God is known? Why would you need faith? Because faith is usually for those people who don't understand God. You just got to have faith. Well, that's our interpretation based upon our failures, not our successes in understanding God. It's not the way a six-ray world works. It's not the way a world that is more spiritual than not, because that, in that world, their faith in God comes not from a lack of understanding of God, but the faith in God is that one has great humility and appreciation for a creator who wants to create more life abundantly in a universe in which to do so, it has to sacrifice so much of its own life in order to do so. And this is a big deal. This is a huge, huge part of this. Some people say, well, if they're sacrificing, why isn't that also part of the first ray? Because sacrifice is part of the first ray. Because in this case, the sixth ray takes the sacrifice and specifically has it focused about faith in God. So you're not just sacrificing about any old thing. You're sacrificing because you need and want and are willing to have faith in God. And that's a big deal. And in a more primitive sense, society, that's along the sixth way, you would find people doing this sort of sacrificial action, maybe on a daily basis, to gain faith in God. And a lot of it is to imbue some part of this faith onto others by serving them, not by preaching to them and not by forcing them to become part of whatever your religion is or threatening them with jihad or being hung or having their arms or legs chopped off or whatever. All that stuff would be obviously blasphemy and nonsense in a real sixth-ray world that is understanding God. Now, taking it from that point, what about a sixth-ray world that is one of the most advanced and was way ahead of us? Okay, what's the difference there? Well, in that world, and I don't want to, this is going to sound strange now, so I got to be careful, but don't get upset when I say this. That world is usually going to have one religion. And you say, well, what religion is supposed to be free and everybody, you know, the religion that they have isn't about how to observe holidays or customs or pray or whatever. Their religion is one because they have a universal faith that comes from understanding and not from some kind of nonsense, but a universal faith in a God that has all the wondrous, virtuous qualities that they find to be part of God. I'm not going to define those qualities because in some cases the virtues change based upon the needs of the world that they're being represented. But it is about virtue, which is spirit and form. And it is about a belief that God will always help us when we are diligent and sacrificial and focused out and selfless. God will help us. And so this is a really big deal, because in the world that I'm talking about, the universal religion is based upon what I just said. It doesn't mean that different people may not have different customs coming from older religions they still hold within themselves and they still celebrate at times. I'm just suggesting that there is a unifying factor in religion in general in a sixth-ray world that's more advanced than where we are. And that unifying factor is that certain elements of what God is are observed by all or most of the people who live there. Now, does that mean that they are going to go out and abolish or destroy or jihad people who are different from them and don't have that agreement with them? No, it's just the opposite. They will do anything and everything they can to provide for what I would call the most open society, where there's oddly one religion, but that religion is so wide and so vast in itself that you don't need all these other quote-unquote religions because everybody can fit into the one. Now, you might be insulted by that or you might not like it. You might feel like your freedom would be infringed upon. But this is all agreed upon collectively behind those involved in it, and yet they still believe in what I would call individual salvation because they believe in the right of the soul. That soul gets its inalienable right, or unalienable, some people say, coming from God. See, it's a really good system in many respects, and we shouldn't shirk it because I say that in the most advanced forms, it probably would be the soul or mostly soul religion. You see? Okay. How is God known then in seventh-ray type of worlds? Well, this is a more masculine approach to God. And in understanding God in a seventh-ray world is understanding all of God's forms of life and non-life or pre-life, and understanding how those forms, not the life in a spiritual sense, but how those forms, when added together, support themselves to express God. That's what's so wondrous about a seventh-ray world, is that if you go through one that is, say, primitive in relationship to Earth, but certainly not as screwed up by any stretch as Earth is, you find a connection between all the living forms of things and how they support each other in hidden ways sometimes, but in ways that are just fantastic in comparison to Earth. There's almost no combative issues between life forms in a world that doesn't have the contentious issues that Earth has. And so that world is where truly lambs lay down with lions. We are a world where, and this is a primitive world, maybe thousands of years older than where we are, the people already have developed this collectively way of interacting with life around them as a form of God. So, yes, lambs are a form of God. Lions are a form of God. All flies, insects, are a form of God. And the form of God, besides the spirit that's behind the form, intrigues us in a seventh-way existence because we want to use the forms as part of our civilization, but never to harm them, only to improve the forms themselves and the species itself. While we become strengthened and grow in inner civilization from incorporating these things with the full understanding that they are really part of God. And there's no happen chance. There's no, well, there's hornets because it happens to be hornets, not because they're needed as part of the whole life picture. Even my arm knows that. So you see, this is the thing about seventh ray is that it's a synthesis of life that allows us to see God through the synthesis of many disparate forms. Remember that, forms of life. It isn't so relevant or prevalent among the spirit of the life, but it is among the forms of life. And so by we investigate the forms. Just like we might investigate the anatomy of humans in comparison to horses in comparison, and then the biology of them and the metabolisms and go on and on. And as we do that, we begin to gain an appreciation for how God is this being that, through great sacrifice, has created the most incredible synthesis of life, especially in these worlds that are not as screwed up as Earth is. And don't have a majority of their time being spent on how to prevent their planet from destroying itself and also prevent evil from becoming entrenched in it. Evil prefers planets generally more under the masculine ray types than the feminine, but it goes after anything it can get. So don't think you're secure or in some way inoculated against evil because you live in a more feminine world. It doesn't necessarily mean that. Just evil has a little easier time in the more masculine regions of the world. Okay, so what about the seventh ray world that has reached its full maturation in existence? How is God known in that world? Well, that's where forms now are directly intervened with by humanity. We're doing a little bit of this ourselves, but sometimes it's done strictly for warring purposes or for purposes of gaining material wealth or other reasons. But in a world that is more advanced than us and doesn't have the evil that we have, the seventh ray then is manifested as a way of humans participating in the synthesis of life. They may actually create new life forms that aren't GMO kinds of modified genes that you have to worry about because they contain more poison than your average can of poison. And this is supposed to be food that we're going to eat and for ourselves and animals. They don't do that. Instead, they create life that is able to integrate itself with other life much more easily, not much more difficultly, and that doesn't cause death and destruction, etc. So their method of synthesis goes to a really profound level in which they won't improve the form of a life unless it serves and helps all the other life forms that it comes into contact with. And in some way benefits those life forms as well as its own. So that's the ticket. That's the thing that allows a seventh-ray world that is more advanced than us and that is working on the God side, not evil, to really become just, in the physical dimension of time and space, to become just the epitome of doing things right. So we can expect that in this other world. And doing things right means that they just gain a tremendous understanding of God. They really know God through all the forms of life, including the ones that they are directly helping to evolve. They are the proponents and the direct involvers of evolution, but not so that life can just become this or that, or you get more corn cobs on the stalk. No, it's because they want to make life more known, more helped, and more interactively helping all other forms of life in a synthesis near the same time. Wow. Didn't know all those kinds of different worlds exist, I know. Now, these are generalities. When I speak in generalities, I'm only giving you a thumbnail of any specific place. So you shouldn't assume that I even came close to covering of these archetypes any specific world. Because specific worlds have their uniqueness. They're supposed to. Earth is not going to become as specific, though, as these other worlds until we become sacred, because the darkness that's on Earth, the evil that's on Earth, interferes greatly with our ability to develop the higher nature to these other planets. So before we can get there, we have to be successful in this tremendous effort to overcome evil. And will we succeed? I don't know. It's certainly not written in stone at this time. So the answer will be, what it will be, I'm hoping that we will be successful in eliminating evil from Earth, making it a sacred planet, and becoming one with some of these great planets that already exist that are along all of the different ray lines. How wonderful would that be to have that as part of your life? How wonderful would it be to communicate directly with God? I would so like to do that. I kept saying that. Or even if I couldn't directly, even indirectly, but it was still coming from God, I would kind of settle for that. That's okay. Also, I would hope that people would be open-minded enough that others who want to live in some other kind of ray world would not be interfered with, would not be condemned, certainly not be jihaded against, which is nuts, in my opinion. Okay, so, we're running out of time here. I just got to gander at the clock. I'm just yakking away, as I usually do. You know that. Put it all together, what does it mean? It means that our understanding of God is minuscule, is almost minuscule and almost totally wrong in comparison to the understanding of God in other worlds, especially ones that are more advanced than us, but even ones that are more primitive than us. This gives us a little better perspective of what kind of universe, when we look out there, we're going to find. Why aren't we in communication with these other worlds? Because we're evil, and we're toxic for them, not vice versa. I know that many people watch all these science fiction programs, and there's always these terrible, terrible, terrible aliens who have amazing technologies, and then our cultures that are twice as old as ours or whatever, who are, you know, they're coming here for a human clam bake, you know, and after that they're going to eat us or kill us or experiment on us or do something weird. And this is nonsense. Because these other worlds, other than the few that are dark like Earth, and they're few and far between, and they usually are prevented from having, what, communication with any other worlds. Because if they could all get together, they could become a formidable force, but they're kept somewhat separate by God's own decisions on how God wanted to create the universe. And then, in addition to that, they don't have much of a chance because evil just doesn't work. Given enough time, it will destroy itself through the destruction of its own consciousness. So the good news is that when we think about the billions of other worlds in our universe, billions of other worlds, some of which are obviously physical like ours, but some are in other dimensions, when you figure all this out, there are virtually none that are harmful or toxic to us. But we are to them. Everybody says, well, the aliens are going to come and enslave us. Yeah, well, what about those 30 or 40,000 nuclear weapons we've got? Not that they can reach right now any place significant, but if they could, we'd probably be shooting them off across the galaxy to kill some planet per planet over on that side, because they just don't think the way we do. I'm sure there's a group that wants to declare jihad on some of these planets that may be 1,000 light years away. The good news is we're never going to be able to do anything about those planets, luckily. Even though they can be here within a blink of an eye, it would take us millions of years to develop if we reach them. So we are the problem. All we have to do is look in the mirror. There is not problems out there. Now, I'm going to make the exception to what I just said so that you don't get confused, hopefully. Yes, it is possible for some of the very darkest planets to have communication with other dark planets only when those dark planets have become much darker in a short period of time, as happened on Earth during World War II. We got so dark so fast that most of the enlightened souls, especially the enlightened souls that are liberated, which we call masters, and so on, were going to leave. And at that time, there was some contact with alien life forms that came to Earth and that were evil. But most of them were chased off before the end of World War II. And rarely do they ever have anything to do with Earth, because they can't. There's this kind of way the whole universe is made. And as long as you yourself are not fully evil, or even more than a third or half evil, you're protected. I mean, truly, it's a great system because of that. So these other worlds, we should look at them as jewels, that someday we will get to understand those worlds and understand God so much better by understanding the people and the civilizations on these other worlds. It's just the thing that everybody would relish, I think, except for evil people. So, yeah, once in a blue moon, we could possibly have some rare contact with some evil forces coming from some other bad planet. But only if we really become so ourselves. Otherwise, they can't even get near us. And in general, the people who are here and working more towards light, they are bringing us closer to God right here. You wish you don't have to look elsewhere to see that there are some that are doing it right here. I'm just saying, if you really wanted to understand and know God, it would be great to be able to understand thousands of other worlds, because then you would get to see God in its full glory and all of its terrific, amazing diversity. Well, we're out of time for right now. I hope this show has been interesting to you. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.